your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Just win.
Your team
just
every
win.
Day.
Just win.
The autumn wind is a raider. Pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
What's up, Raider Nation? Welcome into Friday's edition of the Locked On Raiders podcast, March 12th, 2021. Here to finish off the week really, really strong is your boy Q. As always, you know, you can check me out on Twitter at your boy Q254. A lot of folks hit me up that way. A lot of folks also hit us up by way of the Locked On Raiders podcast. Voicemail line 707-654-4693. Matter of fact, coming up on today's show in segment number three, going to have your calls and your texts. Got Raider Dot, got Joel out the IE. Got Raider Frodo, the text from the No Town. I got all kind of good feedback that we'll be getting to in segment number three of today's Locked On Raiders podcast. In segment number two, really, I could probably just call the whole show like the Daniel Jeremiah show. But in segment number two, Daniel Jeremiah had a pre-draft Zoom conference call on Tuesday, and it was 2 hours long, 2 hours strong. You heard a little piece of it earlier in the week when I asked him about offensive tackle versus defensive tackle and what he would do at 17 if he was the Raiders. You heard that earlier in the week, but I was able to break down his whole little teleconference, 2 hours long, like I said, and so I just have a handful of sound bites that I want to bring to you from that call. Just a bunch of different stuff that has to do with the draft, from players, from classes, from processes, from, you know, what's the biggest challenges that the draft this year presents, all kind of good stuff. You'll hear all that coming up in segment number two. And then segment number one, news and notes of the day. And by the way, you'll hear a little bit from Daniel Jeremiah in segment number one as well, because he was covering Clemson's Pro Day. Actually, he talked about Clemson's Pro Day, and we all know that the Raiders are notorious for drafting guys out of Clemson the last couple seasons, so I thought it was important to get on that that Zoom call as well and break that down. So you'll hear that here in segment number one. So a lot of Daniel Jeremiah on the show, but there's other news and notes around the NFL that we'll get to as well. So got a loaded show for you for this Friday as we finish things off really strong. So let's start off talking with the Raiders when it comes to news and notes. Vic Tafer first reported that free agent defensive back A.J. Boye, he left Las Vegas without a deal, and he came in a couple days ago and was visiting with the facilities. He had to take his COVID test. He is a guy that is very familiar with Gus Bradley, the defensive coordinator, from his times in Jacksonville. Getting a little bit older, he was a member of the Denver Broncos. They cut him. He's still suspended. He's going to miss the first two games of the 2021 season because of PEDs. And so he's a guy that I was kind of lukewarm on if they were going to go ahead and make a move for him. He had his best days when he was the last year he played in Houston with the Texans. And then he signed a big free agent deal and went to Jacksonville. And then in Denver, he just wasn't really, in my opinion, he wasn't very good. But either way, the Raiders brought him in, showed him around the facility, talked to the coaches, and I thought, well, because he is familiar with Gus Bradley, if they like him, if they feel like he's healthy and has something that they could provide or he could provide to the team, they'd probably bring him in and sign him. But he ended up leaving Vegas without a deal, and Vic Tafer said, doesn't mean he can't come back and sign a deal, but he left. And a lot of times when teams have big-time interest, especially when they're available right now, when the free agency doesn't even start till next week, the tampering period starts on Monday, you know, they would just go ahead and sign that deal. Matter of fact, you saw Mark Ingram, the running back that was formerly of the Ravens, sign a one-year, $3 million deal with the Houston Texans on Thursday. So you'd see stuff like that. So either A.J. Boye wanted to kind of test the market and see maybe he can go somewhere else and get a little bit more money, or maybe they weren't feeling A.J. Either way, he did not sign a deal with the Raiders, and he's out and about doing his rounds, taking his rounds, and next week, like I said, the tampering period opens up on Monday, and free agency officially opens up when deals can be signed for most of the veterans out there on Wednesday. But A.J. Boye, he's actually free to sign a deal whenever he wants to. So that was just the news that had to do with the Raiders as far as a free agent defensive back that was in visiting the team. Now, I talked in great length on a Thursday show about John Gruden having so much control. I called it head coach Gruden versus GM John Gruden, and I know a lot of people appreciated that. I had a lot of people tweet at me and say, hey, they were feeling that show, so I thank you for that. But I had John McClain, who I had talked to every single Thursday. Thursday on my radio show on Fox Sports Central Texas, and we scatter shoot talking all things NFL from the Texans to whatever. And I always get in a Raider question or two. So I asked John McClain about John Gruden having that so much control and being in charge of personnel, even though he's the head coach and Mike Mayock is the GM. And I say that in air quotes. We all know that it starts and ends with John Gruden. So how dangerous can that be? Here's John McClain on that.
Well, that goes on all over the league. It's not just him. Bill right. Belichick, Andy Reid, Sean Payton, Pete Carroll, John Gruden, Ron Rivera, Bill O'Brien had that power here. They don't have the title. Now Urban Meyer has it in Jacksonville. They don't have the title of GM like Bill O'Brien did, but everybody knows they have final say on personnel. And the general manager really is like the director of player personnel. So Gruden needs to stick to the draft where they've been successful and not worry about hitting a home run at free agency.
So there was John McClain talking about John Gruden and other coaches across the league that, you know, have the final say with the personnel and who they bring in. And you heard him mention there at the end, John Gruden's need to stick to the draft. Well, I'll say as a counter to that is, you know, the draft hasn't even been that hot as far as what the Raiders have been able to do with John Gruden. And so I know him and Mike Mayock, they've got to figure something out this year. They've really got to figure a way to hit it out the park. And you know, to credit what John McClain was saying, yeah, they did a really good job in the draft in 2019. 2020 is still a question, and it's too early to say, hey, that was a terrible draft or whatever, but you've got to get more out of your draft picks than you did in 2020. So 2019 was really good, to John McClain's credit, but 2020 is still a big question mark. So they have got to, and they have six draft picks right now, they've got to find a way to figure it out and kind of hit it out of the park. They need these players to really come in and be successful in year one. They got to get some real deal players. So, and we'll talk more about the draft. Obviously, there's less than 50 days before the NFL draft kicks off April 29th. That's going to be a fun day. Well, hopefully it's going to be a fun day. You never know. You know, sometimes as an NFL fan, you see the draft and you get excited, and then you see what your team does, and then you go to bed and you're not that excited anymore. But either way, April 29th is a draft less than 50 days away. So before you know it, we'll be talking about what the Raiders did in round one. And as far as free agency goes, the Raiders haven't had a whole lot of luck. They've picked, again, like I said on Thursday's show, they've picked some good players. Unfortunately for them, the players just weren't available. And again, the best ability is availability. Trent Brown, 16 out of 32 games he played. Tyrell Williams, he missed all of 2020. I mean, you get guys banged up. Vontaze Burfict, he got suspended after four games and missed 12 games. You know, I mean, just if you're not available, you do no good for the team. And unfortunately for the Raiders, that's what they keep running into. So if they're going to get some guys in free agency and that tampering period opens up next week, you've got to get some guys that, you know, one, are going to fit with what you're supposed to be doing. You got to get guys that you know what they're going to be doing and how they fit with the team. And then you got to get guys that have availability. So we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. We'll all probably be on the edge of our seat next week as the tampering period starts on Monday at 3 p.m. Central, 1 p.m. on the West Coast. So now, real quickly, I want to get to a couple Daniel Jeremiah sound bites from Clemson's Pro Day. He had a Zoom teleconference following the Pro Day on Thursday, and we all know that the Raiders love to cherry pick and draft guys from Clemson. So one guy that stood out to me, offensive tackle Jackson Carman, he actually didn't participate on Thursday. He's recovering from an injury, but you know, again, offensive tackle, you have to look at that position because you know there's a big hole on the right tackle side. So Daniel Jeremiah was asked, if you were to draft offensive tackle Jackson Carman, would he draft him to play tackle or would he kick him inside?
Yeah, I think you give him a chance to start at tackle for sure. To me, I thought, you know, kind of the right side as a right tackle would be where I would start him and then go from there. I am curious, though, to see, you know, once he gets recovered from the back, being at this lighter weight, I'm curious to see how he moves and maybe you feel even more comfortable with him at tackle. But I did feel like you get him down, you get his weight down, he can hold up a tackle. But man, if worst case scenario, this kid could slide inside. He's got a lot of power. He can really absorb people inside. Great anchor inside as well. So I think he's you know, that's the fallback plan would be inside.
So there's DJ talking about Jackson Carman, offensive tackle from Clemson. He would start him at the right tackle position. Obviously, the Raiders need a right tackle with Trent Brown being gone. So with that being said, he's coming off a back injury. You know, that's something that they've got to be concerned about, and that was one of the big things. He said, well, as long as the medicals all check out. So if the medicals check out on Carman, if everything looks like he's fully healed, what round would he expect him to go in?
Well, you're always going to be dependent on how you come through the medical stuff. So let's assume that everything checks out and that he's going to be good and ready to go for training camp, I think he's going to go on day two. I really do. I think worst case scenario, you're talking about him going in the third round. But, you know, when I go back through that, that's kind of the range of where I had him. He's got a lot of power. I thought he did a really good job when he got out in space on some of the screen game. That, ironically, like my notes that I have, I wrote down there, he's carrying some extra weight. I had him at 335, I think, during the fall. He was even north of that at one point in time, I guess. So to be at 317 today, I thought was a really positive sign for him. And if they check out, if the back checks out medically, I'd be very surprised if he got out of day two.
So that was a little bit of Daniel Jeremiah's thoughts on offensive tackle Jackson Carman, potentially a right tackle. And again, the Raiders love picking Clemson guys. So that's why I really kind of wanted to focus on Clemson here in segment number one. And just wanted to talk about one more guy, and that's running back Travis Etienne. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence is going to go number one overall to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So there's no need to even talk about that guy, right? But Travis Etienne, he's an interesting prospect. And Daniel Jeremiah was asked actually by a guy who covers the Cardinals, who is picking right before the Raiders pick. The Cardinals, I believe they pick at 16 with the Raiders picking at 17. You know, would he have a problem with them taking him in the first round?
I've always been in the camp of I'm okay with drafting running backs in the first round. I think the re-signing him is a whole different conversation. You know, to me, it just run him to the wheels fall off on that first contract and then off you go. To me, it makes more sense to take one of these guys when you have a team that's ready to win. So I had to look at it in terms of like the carries you have. If you say it's going to be a 5-year window, we're going to get the most out of this guy and then we're going to move on. I don't want to waste those carries on a bad football team. So, you know, taking a running back in the top five doesn't really make sense because by the time your team's any good, you'll have already wasted all the good mileage on the back. So if you've got a team that's a playoff caliber team, you feel like can be in the playoffs right now and you want to drop in a big time back, I don't have any problem with it all, you know, and I think where Arizona is with 8-8 coming off last season, right on the doorstep of being a playoff team. If he's your highest rated guy, you think he's the best football player, I would have no problem at all with them taking him. I think I have him in terms of my top 50, he's right around that spot anyways, in terms of a value.
So by no means do I think the Raiders are going to take Travis Etienne in the first round. I don't think that they're going to take a running back in the first round. Already took Josh Jacobs in the first round a couple seasons ago, but just was interested to see because the Raiders are in that wheelhouse that he was talking about as far as, you know, right on the cusp of being a playoff team at 8-8 as the Cardinals were 8-8. So interesting, just in case Etienne were to fall and maybe fall out of the first round, maybe he'd be in play in round two for the Raiders to maybe trade up and even go get him and have him split carries with Josh Jacobs. And I don't think you'd have really too much drop off. But now the one thing about Etienne, he was at his pro day at 215 pounds. So Daniel Jeremiah was asked, and this will be the last soundbite you hear from Clemson's pro day, was asked if he would have to shed that extra weight that he showed up with at the pro day on Thursday.
Oh yeah, I just don't think he needs it. You know, I really don't. Yeah. I don't think that 5 pounds is going to make that much of a difference. I was talking to a GM this morning and we were kind of talking about this and just the conversation was, look, his speed is his power, you know, like that. If you want to have a superpower as a player, his superpower is his speed. So to me, as impressive as that low 4.4 was, he played even faster than that. So, I'd be just fine with him dropping down. And I'm not trying to make him a 25 carry back either. I want him to be as effective as possible. I'm going to do that with the mixture of, 12 to 14 carries and hopefully get him 4 to 5 catches. And that would be his usage. So, for him to try and bulk up so he can carry some huge, huge load, it's not really the way the game's played anymore. We don't have many of those guys. I want you to be dynamic and explosive as fast as you can be for those 15, 16 touches you're going
to
get.
So just want to do a little background homework on Travis Etienne just to see what Daniel Jeremiah thought about him and kind of the way that they would use him and what weight. He showed up to the pro day at 215. He really wants him around 210, 208, around that weight and just be able to use his speed to his advantage. And he's really good receiver out of the backfield. And that's why I said that maybe just in case the board fell certain way and he fell into round two, I don't think he will. It'll probably end up being at the back end of round one. But either way, if he were to fall into round two, maybe it's something that the Raiders start to look at and say, hey, he would be a really, really good 1-2 punch with a Josh Jacobs. But again, it's just doing a little bit of due diligence. That's all that really is. So that's all I got for you for segment number one. Coming up in segment number two, you'll hear more from Daniel Jeremiah, but this is from the pre-draft Zoom conference call that he had earlier earlier in the week. Before we get into that, though, I do want to tell you about a couple great sponsors here on the Locked On Raiders podcast. And the first one is betonline.ag. I don't know how much college hoops you've been watching, but I've been all over it. All the conference tournaments that have been going on, teams trying to get their solidify their spot into March Madness, which is obviously next week, right around the corner. This is one of the best times of year. Lots of fun, and you can get your gamble on with it. BetOnline.ag is the place you need to go. They're your online sportsbook experts. It's not just college hoops, though. It's the NBA. Baseball's right around the corner. Got hockey going on right now. UFC, you know they have something going on almost every single weekend. Yeah, you could bet on that as well, and BetOnline.ag has you covered. All you need to do is sign up for your free account today. When you do, use the promo code LOCKEDON. When you make your first deposit, you'll get a 50% welcome bonus. So you put $100 in, you'll have $150 to play with. You put $200 in, you'll have $300 to play with. It's just like that. No matter what you put in, as long as you use the promo code Locked On, you're going to get a 50% welcome bonus just like that. BetOnline.ag on social media. You can check them out at BetOnline_AG. I also wanted to quickly give you an update on the Built Bar Challenge. We are already up to the sweetest 16 round. And if you just now tuning in, you're like, wait, hold on, Q. What in the world are you talking about? Well, first, I want to tell you about Built Bar. Great taste of protein bar. I've been telling you that for a long time. Super low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, just great tasting protein bar, right? 100% covered in chocolate. Well, right now, the Built Bar Madness is going on. And so today's matchup, like I said, the sweetest 16 round, Churro Puff versus Cookies and Cream. And the winner's going to move on to the enticing eight and face the winner of Peanut Butter Brownie and Coconut Almond. So Churro Puff versus Cookies and Cream today. The winner moves on to the enticing eight. So if you want to get your vote on, you want to help your favorite bar move on, all you got to do is go to BuiltBar.com and get your vote on. Or on Twitter at Bar_Built. That's on Twitter. And remember, when you're there, go ahead and re-up on another load of bars. And when you do that, Locked On 20. You do that, you're going to get 20% off your order. That's Locked On 20 to get 20% off your order at BuiltBar.com. And make sure you check back to see who won today's matchup and who's going to be moving on to the enticing eight from BuiltBar.com. Segment number two is coming up next.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, Raider Nation, here we are. Segment number two of today's Locked On Raiders podcast. Time to jump into Daniel Jeremiah's pre-draft Zoom conference call. Had it earlier this week on Tuesday. 2 hours long, 2 hours strong. Lots of really good stuff, and obviously not going to be able to bring every single bit of it to the show, but I did pick and choose some stuff that I thought was really, really good. So let's go ahead and just jump right into it. And the first little soundbite I want you to hear was Daniel Jeremiah talking about the biggest challenges teams are presented this draft year as far as scouting goes.
To me, I think the missed opportunities at practice from just a purely scouting standpoint, because there's so many things you can pick up at practice. You know, not only you know what they're doing in just the practice, but we want to see how guys work, how they interact. You know, I always go back to Andy Reid and his emphasis he always placed on guys with energy. And it's one thing to have a coach tell you that a guy, you know, a guy's passionate, he likes football. You write that in your notebook. It's another thing to go out there at practice and see a guy bouncing around and leading every drill and kind of getting his teammates going. Those are the pieces of information that we just didn't get a chance to get this year. So that to me is really a big challenge. And then I know, you know, from a general manager level, there's, you know, they're always going to have issues when they don't have all the medical information that they would like. So, you know, the way I understand it on the medical stuff, sounds like 150 players are going to go to Indy for physicals sometime in April. The rest of these guys are going to be doing physicals, you know, locally, and then, you know, kind of like teledoc type stuff. So that's different than getting your own doctors all looking at all these guys. And then if you have any issues or any questions, or maybe it's a non-combine guy, you can fly that guy in for one of your visits and get your another look at him. So there's always going to be some GMs that are just going to be a little bit restless and a little uncomfortable on the medical front.
So there's DJ talking about just what the challenges are, some of the challenges that are presented this year, as it was a COVID year. You couldn't show up to different games, couldn't be at practice. There was a lot of things that you couldn't do this college football season. And oh, by the way, guys opted out. So some guys aren't even playing or didn't play in 2020. You're going back to 2019 film. So it's a lot of challenges for teams to try to get it right. And oh, by the way, the Raiders got to get it right this year. year's draft. So, yeah, good luck. I mean, and I'm not saying that sarcastically. I'm saying that good luck to all teams because it's going to be a lot more difficult than it has been in past years. So another soundbite that I picked out was the ever-going question. It's always a big debate. Do you go best player available? Do you go need? Do you go best player available in position to need? What do you do? You know what I mean? It's always somebody's got their theory and other teams got their theories. So Daniel was asked about, you know, how exactly do you break down the best process in your opinion from your experiences?
To me, the biggest thing is you've got to have those decisions made beforehand. Like I never understood, you know, some teams when you're on the clock and you're trying to scramble around and you're like, oh, you know, what do you think? We've got this guy and we've got that guy in the first round. What do you, you know, what coaches like this guy, like when I was in Baltimore with Ozzie Newsome and Phil Savage and Eric DaCosta, they had the top 150. It was printed out on a piece of paper that they had, and it was literally paint by numbers. So the guy gets picked, cross him off the list, and you're going to be picking at 22, and we're going to take the highest guy that was on that list. The debate was over. All that discussion had taken place. There's no chaos. There's no drama. All that stuff has been hashed out, and you know exactly what you're going to do. And that's why you know, people always say, you know, is it best player available or do you go by need? It's a little bit of a mixture. And I'll just say that because you have your draft board that goes, you know, horizontally where you have all the positions listed. Well, I might have, you know, like the grading scale we had. So say I have a 6-7 grade on Waddle from Alabama, the receiver. Well, then I have a 6-7 grade on Farley from Virginia Tech, the corner. So at that point in time, you know what? We need a corner more than we need a receiver. We've got the same grade on the guy, so we're going to slot the corner above the receiver. So that's how you kind of break some ties there, maybe more need-based. When you get yourself in trouble is when you have a linebacker that you've got, you know, a high grade on, a 6-7, and you say, but we needed a, you know, we needed a receiver. We needed a, you know, a tackle who's at a 6-3 level. Like, don't leapfrog guys over their talent level. That's when you get in trouble.
So there was Daniel Jeremiah right there talking about best player available in position to need, and how it's a little bit of a blend of both. But the really, it's only when it comes down to a tiebreaker. You know, for the most part, like he said, when he was in Baltimore, and this is a story I started to tell on Thursday's show, when he was in Baltimore, it was like, hey, we just went down the line, then down the line, and wherever we were slotted, if we were picking at number 22, whoever the highest guy on our board was is where we went. And we just had a bunch of dudes on the field, and that's all that really mattered. They worried about exactly where they're going to play him or how they were going to play him, but they just went and got a lot of dudes, and you'll hear him talk about difference makers in a quick minute. I know you probably heard some coughing in there as well. That was D. Orlando Ledbetter. Just want to throw that out there. He covers the Falcons. He's a good dude, but I'm thinking, mute your mic, homeboy. Just mute your mic, and you ain't got to be coughing, but yeah, you heard him coughing. So anyway, to double down on that question that Daniel was talking about, best player available or best player available in position to need, he was asked, why do so many teams have problems sticking to their own board?
Well, I think sometimes you can get, you can have some blinders on a little bit and get a little bit narrowly focused and short-term and think, you know, gosh, we've got a game in a few months and I don't know who's going to, you know, who's going to be our left guard. And this guy's right here. This guy fills that immediate problem right now. So then I don't have to worry about that anymore. Well, in fact, you've got other rounds in this draft. You've got other options, you know, through other avenues to try and get players, and you're never going to be able to fill every single spot. So the last thing you want to do is make concessions and sacrifice great players for good players. And then you end up with a team with no difference makers. So that is kind of the challenge. But I give teams, you know, credit that don't fall into that trap. I go back to the Baltimore time when I was there and Terrell Suggs was the rookie of the year, didn't start a game. You know, we had really good edge rushers and he came in on third down. They draft Todd Heap when they already had Sharp. Jamal Lewis when you already had Priest Holmes. I mean, on and on and on. You go through a million of those examples. Take the best player. Eventually it all sorts itself out. But at the end of the day, you don't want to have left a bunch of great players out there for the rest of the league so you could get somebody that could start at left guard.
I think that was one of the biggest keys when I heard him say that, when I heard him answer that question and talk about you don't want to, you know, sacrifice a great player for a good player just because you need something. I immediately thought of the Raiders and felt like they've done that a lot. They've sacrificed probably a lot of great players for good players because they needed that certain position to be filled. And, you know, he said something like that's how you get a team full of good players and no difference makers. And I look on the Raiders squad right now and I say, How many difference makers do they have? Something we've talked about on the podcast many times. How many difference makers do you see on the Raiders squad right now? I feel like more times than not, they've probably sacrificed greatness for someone who's good just to fill a void. That can't continue to happen. So offensive tackle is now a position that everyone's looking at because Trent Brown is gone. So what are the Raiders going to do at the right tackle position? Well, Daniel was asked about by someone who covered the Indianapolis Colts who picked at number 21. Is there an offensive tackle that he could see being in play for Indy at number 21 that could step right in as a plug and play guy? And of course, I just had this because the Raiders pick at 17, which would be before Indy. So maybe one of these guys would be in play for the Raiders as well. So here's his thoughts on offensive tackle, around that area, 17 to 21 range in the draft.
No, I think there's some options there. Christian Darrisaw from Virginia Tech is interesting. I think some teams will view him as a guard, but play left tackle there at Virginia Tech. He's got a really, really strong upper body. He can latch and control guys, powerful guy. He's really good in the run game. So to me, I think he'd be an interesting one. Tevin Jenkins is 6'6", 320 pounds out of Oklahoma State. He's a fun one to study. Just a real tough, physical, kind of a violent player. And you look at the way they want to run the ball there in Indianapolis. He could fit in there as well. So Jalen Mayfield is some. I think teams are split on him. I liked him out of Michigan. Played right tackle there. His tape's a little bit up and down, but he's got a lot of athletic ability and just needs to be a little bit more consistent. But there's a lot to work with. So those guys, to me, would be interesting options that I think could have a chance to step right into the lineup and plug and play.
So there's three guys that Daniel Jeremiah just rolled out for Indianapolis at number 21. But Christian Darrisaw is the guy that Raider Nation has talked about from Virginia Tech. He's a possibility to play left tackle, but maybe he can kick to right. Maybe he ends up kicking inside, but they could probably play him at right tackle to begin with, at least try him out there. Tevin Jenkins from Oklahoma State kind of likes the way that he blocks, and especially in the run game. And, of course, the Raiders really want to emphasize the run, so maybe Jenkins could be in play from Oklahoma State. And then Jalen Mayfield is a guy I've been hearing a lot about, very versatile, from Michigan. Didn't watch a whole lot of him, saw him a little bit, so I knew who he was, but been hearing a lot more about him as of late. So there's three guys right there that you may see in play for the Raiders as early as number 17, or maybe they even trade back a little bit to around that 21-22 range and get one of those guys as well. Also wanted to find out about the defensive line class and the linebacker class, because obviously the Raiders need a lot of defensive help. So he was asked about both, and look, there's good and bad. The defensive line class, not so good. Linebacker class, really good. So here's Daniel Jeremiah talking about the defensive line and the linebacking class.
We'll start with the negative. It's probably one of the worst defensive tackle groups that we've had in the last decade. It's just not very good there. I think there's a good chance we don't see a defensive tackle go in the first round. I would say, just talking to people around the league, and that Christian Barmore is probably the one who's got a chance. I like Levi Onwuzurike from Washington, but I think when it's all said and done, he probably goes in the second round. So it's not a great year for defensive tackles, but you talk about being able to deal with all this speed. I love the linebacker group, off the ball linebackers. I think there's some guys that can really, really play with the way the game is right now. And we talked about Parsons. You've got Owusu-Koramoah from Notre Dame, who's going to be a fascinating player who, played like 210, 215 pounds, but just runs all over the place, makes all kinds of plays. You can deploy him in a lot of different ways, almost function as a strong safety. You can use him as a nickel linebacker. You've got Zaven Collins from Tulsa, who, one buddy that I talked to in the league when I first watched him, he's like, what do you think? I said, man, I really like him. It's hard to find big guys like that. He reminds me a little bit of Van Der Esch, coming out of Boise State. And this is an older scout. And he said, man, I saw some similarities to Brian Urlacher when he was coming out of New Mexico. So talking about somebody that's 6'4", 260 pounds, that can really run and cover. If you want to have fun, go watch his 96-yard walk-off pick six in overtime against Tulane. I mean, you see how athletic that kid is. But Nick Bolton from Missouri. We've talked about Davis from Kentucky. Jabril Cox from LSU. Pete Warner and Baron Browning from Ohio State. Chaz Surratt from North Carolina. all those guys are modern day linebackers to deal with these tight ends and athletic backs out of the backfield. So that to me is it's a really, really good group off the ball guys.
So from what I'm hearing there in the Raiders, if they're trying to build this team up and really try to make this defense a solid defense, they may want to go after a free agent for the defensive line, and then they can look for another linebacker if they feel the need in the draft, because there's a lot more guys to choose from. And matter of fact, my final little soundbite that I want you to hear, he was asked about a guy who nobody is talking about who could end up being a real deal player and make an early impact defensively. And I'll give you a hint. He is a linebacker. I found this one very, very intriguing. Here's Daniel Jeremiah.
If you're asking me for somebody that's going to go outside the top 10 that I think could have a, you know, rookie of the year type impact, I'll go to Kentucky and I'll go to the linebacker, because Jamin Davis, who was listed at 6'4", 234 pounds. Again, I keep telling you guys what these guys are listed at, because we have no verified numbers on any of them. But he looks so much like Darius Leonard when you study him. And you saw the impact that Darius Leonard had as a rookie coming in the second round. I think this kid's going to find his way in the first round once he gets to the pro day and people get a chance to really put their eyes on him. But he's just got some wow plays with his range, with his ability, again, in pass coverage. You watch the Tennessee game, I mean, that kid's got a 85-yard pick six in that game. He covers tight ends all over the field. He's quick to trigger. He's got really good eyes. So he's somebody that, I didn't honestly know who he was during the fall. Nobody had said anything to me about him. And then you're just kind of going through and watching all the tape, and this guy just jumps off the screen. I did find out from a couple of buddies in the league. Yeah, they weren't trying to get that one out, but that you can't hide how athletic that kid is. So he'd be somebody I think's got like legitimate rookie of the year type ability that you don't hear talked about in the top half of the first round.
Little sleeper right there. I thought I'd end it with a little sleeper. Kentucky linebacker Jamin Davis, athletic freak. You know, he's talking about Darius Leonard type guy. And that would be an absolute difference maker. That'd be an absolute dog. Not saying that I'm pounding the table for the Raiders to go get him, but definitely someone to consider. And he's a guy that he's saying that, you know, a lot of general managers, a lot of personnel around the league are like, hey, let's try to hide this guy. Let's try to stash this guy. Don't give him too much pub, because teams are going to start really taking notice of him. So I thought that was an interesting one. A great way to end segment number two of today's Locked On Raiders podcast. Well, what's on your mind? Segment number three, your calls and texts, that's coming up next. 707-654-4693. Before I get into that, though, I do want to tell you quickly about rockauto.com. You know they're a family business, and they've been serving auto part customers online for over 20 years. Go to rockauto.com, shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers, and please believe they have everything. Engine control parts, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpets. So if your car is a classic one or something that you drive every single day, you can get everything you need, and it's a few easy clicks away, delivered directly to your door. RockAuto.com catalog is unique, super easy to navigate. You can check all the parts available for your car. You choose the brands, specifications, and most importantly, the prices that you prefer. That's right. The prices at RockAuto.com are super low and the same for professionals as it is for do-it-yourselfers. So there's no reason to spend up to twice as much money for the same parts. Go to rockauto.com right now. Check out all the parts available for your car or truck. And while you're there, write Locked On Raiders Podcast. That's how they know that I sent you and that I'm doing my job. Simple as that. Great selection, super low prices. All the parts your car is ever going to need is at one spot. That's rockauto.com. Segment number three, it is on the way.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Here we go, Raider Nation. Segment number three of today's Locked On Raiders podcast. Your calls and texts straight off that Locked On Raider podcast voicemail line, 707-654-4693. Show's already running a little bit long, so only going to be able to get to a few calls and texts, but let's go ahead and get things started. Raider Dot, he's pretty fired up talking about coaching, and not necessarily the coordinators, but the position coach. Lots of frustration here from Raider Dot. Here he is.
What's going on, Kill? This Raider Dot tapping in once again. I'm going to just hit you with something right quick. I was a guest on my homeboy's podcast, and I said something on there that I think I should say publicly, since this is our podcast. But anywho, what I was saying, being a lifelong Raiders fan and the history of the trash free agent acquisitions we have, I think it's safe to say the Oakland Raiders or Las Vegas Raiders, we have the worst position coaches in the league. I don't care who you are. We draft studs and pickup studs and free agency. And it's like, as soon as they get with us, whatever bullshit technique our coaches are teaching them, it's like, it doesn't work. We have the worst position coaches in the NFL. We can have the best kicker in the league and make him into a punter. Like, they don't, it's ridiculous. We need to, like, they want to blame the coordinators, but I think it's the position coaches. I think the techniques that our defensive coaches are teaching, especially at the wide receiver position, is no receiver we ever get seems to know how to get open outside of Hunter Winfrey. But it's like our position coaches are trash. It's like they're trash. They go through head coach after head coach, coordinator after coordinator, but who stays there? The position coaches. That's the only common denominator. We got the worst position coaches in the league. And I'm sorry to cuss, but that's fact. You can go ahead and beat that out if you plan on putting this on the radio, but we have the worst position coaches in the league. And that's from top to bottom. And it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. You can't tell me that somehow you go to Oakland, or should I say Vegas now, you go to Vegas, and all of a sudden, the Monstars just suck every bit of talent out your life? Man, stop playing with me, man. The only common denominator through all the bodies we brought in and out is the position coaches. Stretch! Raider Dot out, man.
There he goes, Raider Dot, starting us off right there, and clearly very, very frustrated with the coaching. And look, I'm not telling you it's wrong. I'm saying it's going back to coaching in general. You could blame the position coaches. You could blame the coordinators. You could blame the head coach. I say it goes back to coaches not putting players in positions to be successful. I mean, that's really what it is. Bottom line, that's the coach's job. Regardless if you're the head coach, the coordinator, position coach, it doesn't matter who you are. You've got to set your players up for success. Know what they do well and let them go execute that. And yes, you can make, you know, position changes, but you also have to realize if it's not working, they got to go back to what they do. You know what I mean? And that's why you got to make sure that this guy fits before you go and spend a whole boatload of money on him. But it's kind of like I said, going back to the conversation we had earlier in the week, but clearly can hear your frustration. And look, the Raiders have had a lot of different position coaches as well. It's not like they just all stick there when all these other coordinators come and go. They always rotate a bunch of different coaches out. So if you look at those position coaches and coordinators, they come and go, man. That's what it's been. Even since John Gruden's been back, he's been the constant, but there's been a heavy dose of rotation of a bunch of different coaches and coordinators. So thank you so much for that call, man. Appreciate you. Next up, I got a text from Joel at the IE. He said, Q, what's good, man? Thank you for continuing to put out great unbiased content. This is Joel at the IE. I wanted to speak on some things, O-line and being smart with cap space. Good riddance on Trent Brown. Is he a great offensive tackle? He can be, but you don't pay $30 million for Canby. I feel that if they can somehow restructure Gabe Jackson, they haven't made that official, maybe even throw in another year but less money, and re-sign Good, that's a solid O-line. You could throw a vet or a rookie at right tackle, maybe Kyle Long. Finally, the cap space. I don't know how many whiffed signings you mentioned, but wow. And I'm sure you go back further. Gruden and Mayock really need to hit on free agency this year. We're in year four. It's time. Sign guys who are going to make an impact and will be on the field. Also, like you say, know your role. I really hope Bradley isn't going to let Gruden just dictate. Gruden's infatuation with certain skill sets makes him want to play players out of position. There are going to be a lot of guys out there. I hope that the front office brings their A game. All right, Q, keep doing your thing and stay up. Raider Nation, that's from Joel at the IE. Lots of good stuff right there. I think the offensive line is going to be fine. I think the Raiders will dip into the draft and get some guys. Gabe Jackson, like you mentioned, is not official yet. Maybe they restructure him and keep him around. I think Denzel Good will be re-signed. He earned that. I think they have John Simpson. I know they have John Simpson. I think he could play a role. I think that they'll be fine with the offensive line. I think that they have some good options. You mentioned Kyle Long. There's plenty of free agent right guards or left guards out there that are available as well. There's a lot of different things that the team could do to make sure that that offensive line is solidified. And as far as the cap space and free agency goes, the Raiders have just got to be smart and got to be better. They've got to find guys that fit. They've got to find guys that are available, and they got to find guys that are going to help this team take their game to the next level. I think that they're actually going to be in a good position because John Gruden loves veterans, and you know he tried to go super young with the 2020 team. Maybe he's going to be able to bring in some of those veterans that he really covets that can still play. Not veterans that are over the hill, but veterans that have plenty of ability left because so many have been released and let go because these teams are trying to get under the salary cap. So it might be actually an ideal year for John Gruden to hit on some of the veterans that he covets so much. Next up is a call from Raider Frodo. He's calling about the Trent Brown news and what he thinks the Raiders do at number 17 in the draft now that there's a hole there at that right side of the offensive line.
Hey, what's up, Q? It's Raider Frodo. Just something quick. After the news from Trent Brown being traded to the Patriots, good riddance. I'm happy that he's gone. Now we can move on. So with that, with the first round of the pick, I see us going after an offensive tackle. And an offensive tackle that I've been looking at is Tevin Jenkins from Oklahoma State. And he's got a similar size to Trent Brown, but he's got the nastiness of Rich Incognito. So, I mean, if the Raiders can get that guy in the first round, lock him up for 5 years, you're going to have a really good right tackle. So if you guys want to check him out, like on YouTube, check out Tevin Jenkins from Oklahoma State. And a reason I think they're going to go after him in the first round or an offensive tackle in the first round is because pretty much Mayock, Gus Bradley, and Gruden all know that the Raiders' defense is very, very young. And I think Gus Bradley wants to add more of a veteran presence. So they're going to stay really active on the defensive end of the ball for the free agent period. And I believe in the draft, they're just going to fill in whatever holes they couldn't on the defense. So don't be surprised if they don't go so defensive heavy in the draft, depending what they do in free agency. All right, guys. See ya.
Very good call, my man. Appreciate you. That's Raider Frodo. And yeah, man, the offensive tackle, very deep class. Jenkins, the guy that you mentioned, strong possibility for sure. He'd have to move to the right side. Jalen Mayfield from Michigan is another guy, maybe a round three guy who could play multiple positions, maybe round two or three. Jackson Carmen, a guy that I featured in segment number one from Clemson, another round two or three guy. You know, maybe he can kick over to the right side. Christian Darrisaw, another guy the Raider Nation has been talking about from Virginia Tech, left tackle, have to kick over as well. There's a lot of options there. Definitely a lot of options. You heard Daniel Jeremiah in segment number two talking about the offensive tackles, the three guys that he looks at that could be available as late as number 21, Christian Darrisaw, Tevin Jenkins, and then Jalen Mayfield. So, yeah, it's interesting, man. It should be interesting, but I do believe, like I said, there's plenty of options out there. So thank you so much for that call. Next up is a text from No Town Raider. Hey, Q, No Town Raider here. I just wanted to ask about Raekwon McMillan. I haven't heard anyone say anything about him. Is he a free agent, and can he possibly play the Melvin Ingram role in Bradley's system? Thanks for any info you have. That's from No Town Raider, and that's a great question. I haven't heard anything about Raekwon McMillan, and I'm sure that means that we'll probably hear something later on today, maybe this weekend, as the tampering period begins on Monday. So, you know, you'd have to think of something. Yeah, he was in the last year of his deal when the Raiders made that move for him, when they traded with Miami to get him and bring him in. He didn't get a lot of burn, didn't do a whole lot, so I'm not sure if he's worth assault. I don't know if he's really going to be worth anything. It just kind of is what it is. It seems like another one of those. You just kind of reach out there and see if you can get something. I thought that he had a role with the team, but just didn't really seem to even get on the field too much in 2020. So I don't have any, you know, great answer for you, but I will do a little bit of digging and see if I can come up with something. So thank you so much for that text. Appreciate you. Final call comes from Raider Rick out of Louisville, and I wanted to make this the last call because this one was a great call. He's calling to pay homage, really, to the late, great Al Davis and give him props on how he built the Raiders. Here he is, Raider Rick out of Louisville.
Hey, Q, this is Raider Rick out of Louisville. You know, I've been thinking a lot about, you know, the Raiders of old versus the Raiders of today and what the Raiders used to be and what the Raiders are today. Well, there's one big difference that we never talk about. We talk about alpha dogs and leaders. How about we talk about the guy who built the Raiders, Al Davis? I know a lot of younger Raider fans, they, you know, think of Al Davis. Well, he's just the old guy that was sitting up at the press box. You know, he didn't really do anything. No, he built the Raiders. Let me list off a few names of players that actually played for the Raiders when they were good. Marcus Allen, Tim Brown, Ken Stabler, Howie Long, Gene Upshaw, Art Shell, Eric Biletnikoff, Fred Biletnikoff, Bo Jackson. Jim Plunkett, and Charles Woodson. You know what all those guys have in common? They were picked by Al Davis. Al Davis was the Raiders. Al Davis is why the Raiders are legendary. He's why they're a standout franchise. And the fact is, they've been lost without Al Davis. Al Davis is the Raiders, was the Raiders, will always be the Raiders. And until they find some leadership to at least kind of take his place, they're always going to be a fledgling franchise. They're always going to be struggling to get back on top. They're never going to be as good as they were because they don't have Al Davis. Thanks, Q. I love the show. Talk to you later.
There he goes, Raider Rick. Great call, man. Really great call. It's good to hear from you again. It's been a while, but again, definitely a really good call. And I think you're onto something. And sometimes we do need to take a step back and like I say, sometimes pay respect to our elders. Al Davis is obviously the elder. And I honestly think John Gruden is trying to do exactly what Al did back in the day with the franchise, where he just, you know, he was the guy. He was the guy, the brainchild, the one that, you know, made all the parts fit and everything. And, you know, when the Raiders were successful and they were winning championships, bringing Lombardi's home, Al Davis was the brainchild behind that. Now, I will say, and we all know, and you've been, you know, a Raider fan long enough to know, that was a youthful Al Davis. When he got up in age, you know, there was a lot of misses. There was more misses than there were hits. But, I mean, that's just what happens. You know, Father Time is undefeated. It don't matter who you are, Father Time is always undefeated. Again, rest in peace to the great Al Davis. But, yeah, I think John Gruden is trying to replicate that. He just isn't hitting on personnel. And that was kind of the point of Thursday's show. He's not hitting on personnel like Al was hitting when he was hitting. You know what I mean? And so that's why I think he just needs some checks and balances. He needs someone to tell him that, hey, that's not a good idea. And it's funny, I was on a radio show on Thursday, Fox Sports in Fresno, California. My guy CK does a radio show, and he hit me up, and he was talking about John Gruden, the personnel guy, because he had listened to my show on Thursday that I did, the head coach John Gruden versus the GM John Gruden. And I said, look, you know, we're in radio, and what happens in the early days of radio, we would go in, I would have every week, I'd have what we call an air check meeting. I would do my shows all week long and I'd record them, and then I'd come into my boss's office and he'd say, okay, let me hear Wednesday's show, let me hear the second hour of Wednesday's show. He just picked something randomly and listened to it, and then he'd pick out all the areas that I messed up. He said, all right, you should have done this like this, you could have done this better, this is why you don't do it like this. And you know, it just basically, it would be critiquing me, and that made me better, that made me a lot better. And when you don't have that guy to sit you down and point out your flaws and point out what's wrong, then you think that you're doing everything the right way, you know what I mean? And so, and it's funny because now in radio, I don't have a guy that gives me any air checks. I mean, I'm basically my own best critique, and luckily I've been doing it long enough where I can critique myself. But still, it's better when you can have someone sit you down and listen and say, hey, this is what you need to work on, this is where your biggest issue is. Well, John Gruden doesn't have someone that can sit him down and air check him and say, hey, this is your biggest issue. Mark Davis ain't doing it. Mike Mayock ain't doing it. They're working together, but we all know that Mike Mayock is working for John Gruden, not necessarily, you know, John Gruden working for Mike Mayock, if that makes any sense. So, yeah, he's trying to get there. He's trying to live in that, you know, that Al Davis mold, but he's not Al Davis. And, you know, it's just, it is what it is. And look, it's very difficult to do. Very, very little have done it. Very few have been able to pull that off. That was the greatness of Al, again, when he was a youthful Al Davis and he was hitting on that. You know, he was hitting on personnel. When he got older, it was just like, hey, he was going for home runs so he can get one last hurrah, and it just never happened. But thank you so much for that, man. Definitely appreciate you. That was a great call. Great way to end the show. Little lengthy show, but it's a Friday, so let's go ahead and finish off this week strong. Still got a call from Brother Marquise in the 305. Jordan in Oregon got a call from him. Got a couple of the texts that I want to get to. We'll do it on Monday's show. That'll be the first day of legal tampering. It doesn't open up till 3 p.m. Central Time, 1 p.m. on the West Coast, of course, 4 o'clock Eastern. So we'll talk about that, kind of give a little bit of a preview for some free agency on Monday's show. Have a great weekend, Raider Nation. Little Q, he's in town. Well, he's actually in Austin playing in a tournament this weekend, so I'll be out of pocket for a little while. I'll be watching Little Q playing his hoop competition, and hopefully he does really, really well. But we'll be back here on the podcast on Monday, Raider Nation. So have a great weekend. Stay safe. You know, wash your hands, social distance, wear your mask, be safe. Just be safe out there. Take care of your family. And most importantly, as always, Raider Nation, just win, baby.